Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's the middle of the week and the first week of Advent. It is Wednesday, December 4th. Great to be with you. Thanks for tuning in to Catholic Connection. Hope your day is going well. I'm looking forward to heading to Providence, Rhode Island this weekend. Leave on Friday, God willing, after the program, and speak on Saturday. Two talks. Be on Sunday, becoming a 24/7 Catholic, and have yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Mary pondering all these things in her heart is actually the theme of the conference, and I'll be picking up on that. So if you haven't registered yet, if you know someone on the East Coast who's interested in attending, I think they'd still have some room. They're close to 200 women registered so far. We'd love to see you there. It's a beautiful, beautiful day of reflection during Advent, and it is a retreat for Catholic women in the Diocese of Providence. Coming up on the program today, very excited to have our guests with us, including, we'll wrap up with Joni. There's some big news about the Nativity display and some other things going on that she will share in our Vatican News segment with Joni. And prior to that, though, I'm left-handed, so I tend to go backwards. We are going to be speaking with, once again, Dr. Matthew Petrusik. We had him on a couple of weeks ago. It was such an interesting interview. And my very well-read producer, Andrew Krucha, came across an article by Dr. Petrusik talking about DEI and this really brilliant approach that the Word on Fire Institute is taking and helping companies back away and see a person for who they really are in terms of true dignity worse compared to what DEI has tried to claim that they're doing, which doesn't work. Now, the reason I wanted to bring Dr. Petrusik back on is there have been several stories recently about major corporations and even universities, including in my own backyard in southeastern Michigan, the University of Michigan, backing away or having discussions about backing away from DEI. So we'll talk with Dr. Petrusik at 15 minutes past the hour. And then, as I mentioned, we will take it to 39 minutes past the hour when we hear from the lovely Joan Lewis from Rome. There is a really cool story on Catholic News Agency, and I sent this to Joan this morning, about the Nativity display in St. Peter's Square, which has not been unveiled yet, but apparently they're building a mini island. This is just really cool. So what they're doing is they're going to be giving us an example of life in northeastern Italy on this Venetian island at Christmas time. And this is a very, a very Italian thing. What the Italians do, which is so beautiful, wherever you go in Italy, and I mean, we do this all over the world, right, as Catholic Christians and Christians in general, we have these beautiful nativity scenes, or in Italian, the presepes. But in Italy, what they do is they incorporate scenes from the different villages. Very popular to see mountain formations and different types of animals and people from different walks of life. Literally, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, that are all looking up or looking toward the nativity scene. And it's a real act of love in terms of creating these and giving people an example of a slice of life and how Jesus, the Son of God, the Word made flesh, Emmanuel, bursts into our life, our everyday life, while we're baking, while we're cutting and selling the meat, while we're selling the flowers on the street corner. And it's such a beautiful thing to see. And I talk a lot about this in my book, Italy Shrines and Wonders, published by EWTN, which is coming out in January. So excited about it. But these different scenes, I think this is really beautiful to do this because it just takes you back and it helps you focus on what's important. Because you'll see in the vast majority of these displays, as I mentioned, all these different participants that are structured, that are designed, they're always looking toward what? The scene in the manger. So anyway, I just get so excited about this stuff and just wanted to share that with you. I'm sure Joni will have a lot to say about it as well. So that's the show for today, and we will discuss with Joan and also interesting discussion coming up with Dr. Petrusik from the Word on Fire Institute. Weather-wise, a National Weather Service is saying that we still have a strengthening clipper storm that will be shifting now across southeastern Canada today into tomorrow with an Arctic cold front crossing the Great Lakes in the Northeast, producing still intense bursts of snow and gusty winds. And then we have localized short-duration blizzard conditions that will be possible with several feet of additional lake effect snow in the Great Lakes. And then just the opposite, on the West Coast, we have dry and warm conditions expected in the West. So that's the forecast. Be safe and warm wherever you are, and we're so glad you're tuned in to EWTN, your 24/7 Catholic radio network. It is 5 minutes past the hour on a busy Wednesday morning. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate your listenership. And we want to remind you that this program and newscast is brought to you by our friends at House of Joppa, a wonderful, wonderful company that offers beautiful items, Catholic items, to your home. HouseofJoppa.com. Let's get started. The Holy Father's prayer intention for the month of December, as Catholic News Agency explains to us, is for pilgrims of hope. He said, Christian hope is a gift from God that fills our life with joy. And today, he said, we need a lot of it. The world really needs it a lot, the Holy Father added. And those were comments that came in a video released yesterday. The Holy Father pointing out that when you don't know if you'll be able to feed your children tomorrow or if what you're studying will allow you to get a good job, it's easy to get discouraged. He said, where can we look for hope? He responded, hope is an anchor that you can cast with a rope to be moored on the shore. We have to hold on to the rope of hope. Hold on tightly. He encouraged the faithful to help each other discover this encounter with Christ who gives us life. And he said, let's set out on a journey as pilgrims of hope to celebrate that life and enter into the upcoming Jubilee is the next stage, he said, within that life. In other news this morning, a case challenging Tennessee's ban on medical interventions with children who identify as transgender will be heard by the Supreme Court today. The case before the court seeking to resolve the question of whether that ban constitutes a violation of the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. The law at the center of Wednesday's hearing was signed last year by Tennessee's Republican Governor Bill Lee. Michael Kastner tells us about some problems in South Korea, where lawmakers are now calling for the president there to be impeached.
Yoon declared martial law in South Korea on Tuesday, saying it was necessary to protect against threats posed by North Korea. He lifted the order about 6 hours later after it was vetoed by parliament and protests began breaking out across the country. Yoon's decision took the U.S. by surprise, and opposition lawmakers are now calling for him to be impeached. Members of South Korea's largest labor unions have been protesting in the streets of Seoul and are threatening to strike until Yoon resigns.
A majority of the Supreme Court seems inclined to reject a request that Holocaust survivors and their families be allowed to sue Hungary in American courts. The case argued yesterday is over families trying to recover property stolen by the country in World War II when it loaded Holocaust victims onto train cars. Attorney Joshua Glasgow represents Hungary in the matter.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, Hungary and its national railway, MAV, are immune from suit under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, unless the expropriation exception applies.
The family arguing some of the money Hungary got from selling property was used to buy things from the U.S. Meanwhile, the Federal Appeals Court had previously sided with the country, and a decision in the case is expected sometime next year. Bree Tennis tells us a new poll from one area of the country, a survey in San Diego, folks there agree with mass deportations.
The poll interviewed 500 adults from San Diego County, and it showed 49% of them either somewhat or strongly approve of Donald Trump's plans for mass deportations of undocumented immigrants, while 35% said they strongly disapprove. And 74% of that original 500 survey, December 2nd and 3rd, say they would like the incoming administration to create pathways for immigrants to come to the U.S. legally. Donald Trump takes office January 20th.
And New York City Mayor Eric Adams is confirming he will cooperate with ICE under certain circumstances to deport illegal immigrants.
Those who are here committing crimes, robberies, shooting at police officers, raping innocent people, have been a harm to our country. I want to sit down and hear the plan on how we're going to address them.
He is calling for a sit down with Trump's border czar, Tom Homan. Adams notes that I'm not going to be, he says, warring with the administration. I'm going to be working with the new administration. And Texas Governor Greg Abbott is threatening to pull state funding from a Houston hospital. This because of a doctor's viral video telling patients they don't have to reveal their citizenship status. Abbott issuing an executive order back in August requiring public hospitals accepting Medicaid or children's health insurance to report on health care for illegal immigrants. The order took effect in November, and Dr. Tony Pastor, a cardiologist at Texas Children's Hospital, posting a TikTok video in which he said hospitals have to ask the question, but patients can't be made to answer it. The video has since been taken down. And speaking of Texas, a Lone Star State may start busing illegal immigrants to Immigration and Customs Enforcement or ICE holding centers instead of to sanctuary cities. Since 2022, Texas has bused more than 100,000 illegals to sanctuary cities such as D.C. and New York. An anonymous source within the Texas government says they may soon be sent straight to federal detention centers instead of sanctuary cities as to speed up the deportation process. Kristen Marks tells us the FAA is now banning drones over President-elect Trump's golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey. This due to reports of unexplained drone activity in recent weeks.
The agency is prohibiting drone flights over the course in Somerset County through December 6th, as well as over the Picatinny Arsenal military base in Rockaway in Morris County through December 26th. Reports of unauthorized drones were first reported in Morris County on November 18th. Reports have come in from places not far from Bedminster, like Mendham, Chester, and Morristown, rattling many residents.
They're up for a long time.
That's crazy. I wonder what they're looking for.
It's a little scary.
Authorities stress there's no known threat to public safety. The FBI is investigating.
And Brian Shook tells us the Congressional Office, or the Department of Government Efficiency Caucus, now has its first Democrat as a member.
Florida lawmaker Jared Moskowitz said in a statement that he's joining because he believes that streamlining government processes and reducing ineffective government spending should not be a partisan issue. President-elect Trump's administration is starting the Department of Government Efficiency, which Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy will lead.
The search continuing for a Pennsylvania woman who may have fallen into a sinkhole while looking for a cat on Monday night. Emergency responders began searching for 64-year-old Elizabeth Pollard early yesterday morning. This after finding her 5-year-old granddaughter in her vehicle outside a restaurant in Unity Township that's about 30 miles southeast of Pittsburgh. The girl was fine despite being in the car for several hours in cold temperatures. Rescue workers saying that a shoe was found about 25 feet down in the hole yesterday. That hole is connected to an old mine, according to officials. And they say there is hope that the woman could be alive underground in an air pocket as the search continues. Joe Manchin says representing West Virginia in the U.S. has been the honor of his life.
I was not elected to take a side. I was elected to represent all sides. The only side I've ever truly believed in is the American side, which I believe we all belong to. And that's why I entered public service all those years ago.
The departing senator, who spent most of his 14 years in the chamber as a Democrat before switching to independent this year, gave a farewell address to his colleagues yesterday. And tonight is the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree lighting. Former New York Police Department Chief Terry Monahan says security will be tight.
They will have counterterrorism dogs out there, vaporweight dogs sniffing, and they have to prepare for protest. Because as we saw at the Thanksgiving Day parade, people attempted to disrupt that parade.
Every person who attends tonight is expected to get screened at two entry points on 6th Avenue, and it will open at 4 o'clock this afternoon, those different entry points. Meanwhile, the public display of the U.S. Capitol Christmas tree is now officially open.
3, 2, 1. There you go.
Hey!
Good job. Last night, House Speaker Mike Johnson hosting the 60th Christmas tree lighting ceremony on the west lawn of the Capitol building, joined by an Alaska fourth grader, Rose Burke, who pushed the button to light the 53-foot spruce tree. She received that honor to light the tree after winning an essay contest. The tree came from one of Alaska's national forests and is adorned with more than 5,000 lights and over 5,000 Christmas decorations. And Monica Nelson tells us as we wrap up a newscast on a Wednesday morning, December 4th. Speaking of Christmas, when you order those Christmas items online and have them delivered to your home, there's always that risk of being a victim of a porch pirate.
If you catch one, it can be a headache to fight back. Porch pirate victims usually need to file several claims, maybe with the retailer, the shipping company, the credit card company, or the local police. The process can take weeks, and there's no guarantee of your money back. According to the Wall Street Journal, online shoppers can now buy insurance to protect themselves against porch pirates who steal packages from their doorsteps. Porch Pals is a subscription-based startup. They offer coverage for up to $2,000 of stolen deliveries or up to 3 claims a year for $120 annually. Experts warn while insurance can provide peace of mind, it might not always be the most cost-effective option.
It is a Wednesday morning. It's December 4th, 2024. Thanks for joining us on Catholic Connection, a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN. If you're a new listener, welcome. We're so glad you're joining us. You can find out more information about all of our programming, EWTN.com and AveMariaRadio.net. The Catholic Church has the answer because we are the fullness of truth, right? And when it comes to DEI, we are leading the way in many ways and helping people understand that there is something much more helpful, true, and beautiful, helping people understand their true dignity. And that's what the Word on Fire Institute, of course, founded by the amazing Bishop Robert Barron, is all about. And we'll be joined by his senior director and a professor of Catholic ethics, Dr. Matthew Petrusik. He's coming up next. He joined us a few weeks ago and talked about what they're doing to address this issue, the Word on Fire Institute, and not just within the Catholic world. And I wanted to have him back on because there was some breaking news in the last week or so about more and more entities, colleges, workplaces saying bye-bye to DEI. We'll explain up next.
Hello, Steve Ray here. Hard to believe it's already been 20 years of leading Catholic pilgrimages. So we're going to celebrate with a Danube River cruise. We've chartered our own ship. We'll share meals and enjoy good Catholic fellowship together. We hope you can join us next June through Budapest, Vienna, Salzburg, Prague, and a whole lot more. But sign up quick. It's already more than half full.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, go to AveMariaRadio.net and find the pilgrimage link.
Catholic Connection is sponsored by House of Joppa. House of Joppa's mission is to share the beauty of our one holy Catholic and apostolic faith in our homes through Catholic home decor, art, candles, statues, rosaries, and Catholic jewelry. They're gifts designed to help you live out your Catholic faith. For more information, go to houseofjoppa.com. That's houseofjoppa, J-O-P-P-A.com.
More of Catholic Connection coming up on EWTN and Ave Maria Radio.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
This show is underwritten in part by the following nonprofit company.
My dear brothers and sisters, I'm Bishop Gerald Vinke of the Diocese of Salina in Kansas. This year, you can create a Christmas miracle for a child growing up in the extreme poverty of a developing country. By donating to Send a Box of Joy, you will surprise a child with what could be the first Christmas gift of his or her life. You can bless a child today by donating at boxofjoy.org.
You're having a beautiful Wednesday morning in the first week of Advent, and I'm excited to have our guest back with us, Dr. Matthew Petrusik, who's the Senior Director of the Word on Fire Institute and its Professor of Catholic Ethics. He was on with us back in November 22nd, before Thanksgiving, about these developing stories since the election about how DEI programs, whether it be at companies or schools, are really being either reexamined and some of them are being removed altogether, and it continues. And I noticed the last couple of days that there were some pretty big stories, and just over the weekend, and being that I live in southeastern Michigan and not too far, about an hour away from the University of Michigan, there was discussion over the weekend, and they were interviewing various talk shows. They were interviewing a board of regent, one of the board of regents, and they're really investigating this at U of M, which is one of the biggest pushes that they saw, one of the biggest pushes for DEI during the Biden administration, and now they are having a change of heart. And in addition to talking about this and examining this from a Catholic perspective, Dr. Matthew was involved in a beautiful program that the Word on Fire Institute has developed to go into companies and help them truly be serving justice when it comes to the workplace and employment. Matthew, thanks so much for joining us again. Good morning. Happy Advent.
Good morning to you. Happy Advent.
All right, so let's talk about this recent story. We've got major companies. We've got Walmart, Toyota, Ford, and others that are rolling back DEI. And we just heard over the weekend, as you and I were chatting during the break, about the University of Michigan reconsidering their DEI policies as well. What's happening with this? Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, well, I think it's cliche to say, but it's absolutely true, is elections have consequences. And I think what happened with our recent election is that there'd always been a sense that the population as a whole was unhappy with DEI for good reason, but there really wasn't any clear empirical proof that that was the case. And I think with the election outcome and how we saw it trend in a very, very clear direction, companies now have political cover in order to say, well, look, it's time to go into in a different direction. And I think, as we were talking about over the break, things would be very different. We wouldn't be seeing this right now if the election had gone a different way. And the incoming Trump administration has also very clearly communicated that, especially with in higher education, that federal funding will now be tied to policies that are race blind. And so if they find DEI policies that are illegal now, but now will be investigated, then they're going to cut funding. And so you have people paying attention who before really were trying to stay underneath the radar.
Well, given the fact that we have laws and have had laws on the books, both statewide and federally, regarding discrimination and certain policies, where did DEI come from and why, do you think?
Well, it had been growing in universities for a long time. I know most people's experience of it probably only goes back about 8 to 10 years. But for those who work in higher education, the kind of language, the kind of structures, the kinds of hiring policies have actually been in the university, I mean, for decades. And so, unfortunately, like so many terrible ideas that have bled out into the general population, it had its origins in the universities. I think it was a confluence of events. You know, it had a lot to do with the pandemic. It had a lot to do with the killing of the death of George Floyd. And it's just sort of created a perfect storm that allowed for these ideas to have reign over the population for a while. And I think it was mostly ruled by fear. Most people, including those in high high positions within companies, were afraid of being called a dirty name. They were afraid of being targeted and losing their job. And so it created a kind of shield, even if it was completely unjust.
And so then what happened? Because these DEI policies that are supposedly designed to help people of color and other minorities, what happened was it was the opposite, where there was more discrimination, only in a different direction. And these companies started not only losing money in many ways, the bottom line was impacted, but so was the actual workplace environment, and not in a good way.
That's right. I mean, we can look at the moral component of DEI, and it's as we talked about previously, it's just based on a false understanding of individuals and humanity. But you can also just isolate the business part of it. It just didn't work. If we assume good intentions, which again, I think we have good reason to question whether good intentions with many of these policies, but if we assume, we can ask, okay, well then did they work? And now there's very strong evidence, provable evidence, right, measurable evidence that it had the absolute opposite effect and didn't help anyone, especially including those for whom it was intended in the first place. And so just across the board, it's been a failure.
We're talking with Dr. Matthew Petrusik from the Word on Fire Institute, wordonfire.org. And I think this is such an opportunity, and you addressed this the last time you were on, Matthew. I know you've been working on this since last year, but you have this beautiful alternative, Dignity, Equality, and Solidarity. We'll get into that in more detail after the break, but just give us a general idea of what that is and what we're talking about.
Yeah, it just grows right out of the Catholic social thought tradition. This is something we've been working on as Catholics literally for centuries. And so it's just taking the basic staples of justice itself and then justice as it applies to the workplace and just reaffirming those principles. And, you know, it's unfortunately been sidelined for a long time. But now, since we've seen the failure of DEI, it's ready for a comeback.
And so how do you do that in terms of, and again, you mentioned this on the last program, but I imagine, are you getting, and I would hope you are, and I think you probably are, getting requests to come in and offer this as an alternative to DEI, the Dignity, Equality, and Solidarity. Is that happening?
It is happening. And so just to clarify, this is some work that I've been doing independently from my work at
right.
the Fire Institute, although
right.
it's tied to some of the research. Yeah, well, companies have been looking for an alternative. And as we talked about last time, you know, there's the legal component here. Many of these cases are starting to come to a head. Companies have been losing money, but they still want a vocabulary and a vocabulary that's based, you know, on some real substance, on truth, to be able to talk about justice in the workplace. And so there's, as we see the collapse of DEI, the field is really wide open. And it's encouraging for me to see that companies are just not rejecting it, rejecting DEI and pretending, you know, like this never happened. They are looking for an alternative. And, you know, fortunately, Catholic social thought tradition always been there, ready to supply that alternative.
So this really could be seen in many ways as a Romans 8:28 situation. We're going through this whole DEI experience. Maybe some of the people who did need to work on some of these areas had their eyes opened and realized, well, okay, I want to address this, but not in the way that we've been told we have to address it.
That's right. I mean, the sense of for justice is universal. And, you know, it gets buried by sin, but it's always there. And we want workplaces that aren't just, they're not just, you know, functional. They're not just to earn a paycheck. They're not just to move widgets around. We want workplaces. We spend so much time at work to be places that help us to become, to realize our full moral potential.
Amen. So, Matthew, we have to take a break. That's the music. Hold on 1 second. We'll go into the more detail. Sorry about that. So interested in this topic. I led you down a path where we had to take a break. I apologize. More with Dr. Matthew Petrusik after the break. Stay tuned.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Teaches that Jesus Christ is literally and wholly present, body and blood, soul and divinity, under the appearances of bread and wine. In the Bread of Life discourse, documented in John chapter 6, Jesus states that he is the bread of life, and that his flesh is true food and his blood true drink. The Jews were scandalized in verse 52. How can this man give us his flesh to eat? Jesus does not back down, but reiterates this teaching four more times over the next four verses. Many left in verse 66 because this teaching was truly difficult. But at no point does Jesus water down his teaching and call them back. No, he allows them to leave, and even questions his 12 apostles if they too wish to leave. Jesus intended to be understood literally, and the Jews, apostles, and the Catholic Church absolutely take him at his word. Examining the truth of the Catholic faith, this is faithforensics.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I said to the churches one day, what do you think you're going to look like in heaven? Oh, some of them had absolutely magnificent ideas. I didn't think of one of them. And so I got desperate because then my turn came. I didn't know what to say. And so in desperation, I said, what do you think I'll wear in heaven? And they all said with one voice, armor!
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Having a great conversation once again with Dr. Matthew Petrusik. And he is connected, obviously, to the Word on Fire Institute, but what we're talking about now is something he's done on his own, but it's the research is connected to the wonderful institute, of course, run by the amazing communicator, I think one of our best evangelists right now, Bishop Barron from the Diocese of Winona, Minnesota. Dignity, equality, and solidarity, not DEI. So, Matthew, one of the things that I was discussing with you during the break is that the church teaching, if we could just take the time and crack it open, it is so... it's so amazing, and yet it shouldn't be. It's kind of be like God saying, duh, I told you to, so I'm God. This is how I created the world. But he would never do that because he's merciful, and you know, that's me speaking. It's like, duh. Once you crack this open, it makes so much sense, and it all goes back to the natural law of who we are and how we're created.
That's right. It's based on our fundamental dignity as human beings, which establishes a baseline equality for all people. And that means that all people, independent of any of their achievements or lack of achievements, deserve equal respect. And at the same time, without diminishing that, it recognizes that we're free. And insofar as we're free, we have the potential to realize the full dignity that's within us. And depending on how we respond to that dignity, we'll either be becoming more fully who we were intended to be by God, or we'll be moving away from that. We're moving in the opposite direction and becoming less than what we fully intended to be. Now, that may sound remote from workplace concerns, but the basic idea is Yes, baseline equality for all people, absolute respect for all people, but also respect individuals' free decisions. And those free decisions have consequences with regards to hiring decisions and performance reviews and the outputs that we do in our respective positions within the workplace. So it's all built in there. And then on top of that, you have solidarity, which recognizes, look, so we are dignified, we are equal, but we're all radically vulnerable as well. And so we're called not only to realize our own individual dignity, both in the workplace and outside of it, but also to help others to do the same. And so we can build workplaces on the principle of solidarity, mediated through the principle of subsidiarity, which we could also get into, that seeks to create a place of belonging for all those in the workplace. So it's, again, it's all there in a beautiful package in the Catholic social thought tradition. We just need to get it distributed again.
I think there's also a great deal, a lack of connecting the dots. This is what I always say, because if you go back, and this is what the media don't do, one of the many things that the secular media don't do, the legacy media, is pull back and say, okay, you see all these companies, for example, backing away from what is known as, you know, this very quote-unquote progressive DEI types of programs in the workplace. And then you look at the connections with these different organizations that started this. And you look at what's happened within these organizations with corruption and all kinds of very illegal things being done with money, in particular groups that have now imploded, completely imploded. And these are the same ones that were tied to these types of programs, pushing and pushing and pushing, making threats against large companies and universities in order to continue to go down this road. But the media need to look at this. A good investigative journalist or anyone really who's in the media should be making this connection and saying, well, why did these programs implode so quickly? And what was going on here? And then you can help people understand, but they never seem to. They just move on to the next thing. Now they're talking about the fact that they're backing away from DEI, but there's really no analysis in connecting the dots, which I think is a real loss for people, so they can understand, you know, more fully what happened.
That's right. One of the dominant narratives within the legacy media is that companies are backing away from DEI because they're being coerced to because of the incoming Trump administration. And, you know, there's an element, there's always an element of truth to that, right? The law is now going to be enforced. The anti-discrimination laws are now going to be enforced. But you're right, there's something much deeper happening beneath the surface, and that's that this has always been built on a collection of lies about who we are and who we're called to be. And so it's crumbling from the inside more than it's being attacked from the outside. And, you know, good. It's harmed our society in very serious ways.
So do you think this is a wave that's going to continue both in higher education and also in the business world, Matthew?
I do. I think, again, since the law is going to now start being enforced, I think companies, just out of sheer self-interest, and just, I don't want to pause on that, you know, DEI was so dominant, and the fear of persecution, being labeled, you know, a racist or homophobic or transphobic, that fear was so strong that companies were actually willing to not only hurt their bottom line, but basically pull out the floor from their bottom line. We saw in that case of Bud Light, for example, right? Mm-hmm. That they were willing to even go against greed in order to bow down to this ideology. So I don't want to underestimate like the real power that it had here. But now that things have changed and the law is going to be enforced, I think we're going to see at least for the next 4 years, we're going to see companies moving in a very different direction for that reason alone.
I just can't understand how there couldn't have been, and I think there were a few. I mean, I know they got attacked. I'm trying to remember the different firms who stood up against it. But when you see that fallout and what happened with the backlash, for example, you mentioned the whole thing with the transgender person and the beer company, Anheuser-Busch, it's like you have a right as a company to do what's right for your customer base. I mean, who in PR was telling them that was a good idea?
You know, there's so many factors, Teresa. A lot of it also is the people who populated, you know, the marketing and HR divisions of these companies. They had come out of universities that they'd been basically trained to see the world in through a DEI lens. And so they're the ones who are, you know, actually making those inseparable commercials that we had to watch for 4 years. And so, again, it has a lot to do with the inputs as well at the employee level. So it's, you know, there's going to be some tumult because, I mean, these people haven't gone anywhere. Some of them have been fired, but a lot of them are still in their positions. And so there is a chance it could flare up again. especially if the political regime changes again in 4 years. But for now, we have a respite, and it's important. It's essential that we fill that vacuum with good, nutritious DES instead of DEI.
We're talking about dignity, equality, and solidarity versus DEI. We're talking with Dr. Matthew Petrusik, who's done a great deal of research on this. And see, that's the thing, because this is a stealth evangelization effort, if there ever was one, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think we're seeing across the board, you know, there's another story I was reading recently that, you know, Bible sales are through the roof.
I just did that story yesterday. I just saw that. Yep.
Mm. Yeah, and yep. It, you know, it's all connected because we've seen now the consequences of these really, really poisonous ideas that have been circulating in the culture. They've come to a head. We've seen the terrible rotten fruit that they've borne. And now people are understandably looking for an alternative because the ground has fallen out from beneath them. And the church is there, always has been, always will be, but yep. It's unfortunately often ignored.
I am really hoping, and I would love to hear, and I'm sure you're taking notes when you work with these companies, and thank you for this effort. I'm sure there is going to be conversions and reversions, because once you start, I was telling you my own reversion story of how on my way back to the church, I really broke open the catechism and did a lot of apologetics on my own, my husband and I, and I was just like, I felt like, wow, where have I been all these years? I could have had a V8, right? Because it was so incredible. I mean, it's just phenomenal. Oh my gosh, the church gets this. Well, that makes sense because it's God, but you know, you don't have when you're a person who's going through a whole transformation in your life. But I will be fast. I think there's going to be a book in here for you, Matthew, talking about transformations and conversions and reversions when people in the companies, and I'm thinking at some pretty high levels, are going to be exposed to what, at the end of the day, is Catholic social teaching, which is all about the dignity of the human person. I can't wait to see that book. I'm going to endorse it for you. Not that it means much, but I'd be happy to do that. But thanks, Matthew. Great talking to you again. Dr. Matthew Petrusik, check out the great work he's done on this, Dignity, Equality, and Solidarity. We will give you a link to the research, and we'll put it on the archive section of Catholic Connection. Stay tuned.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Mother Angelica said that the essence of evangelization is to tell everyone that Jesus loves you. Matt Frad says that it is one beggar showing another beggar where to find bread. Are we so full of the things of the world that we can't hear or receive the gifts that God is giving to us? In Isaiah, we hear, "The Lord delights in you. I've called you by name. You are mine. You are precious in my eyes, and I love you." Well, we often don't want to hear that, and in the Gospel of Matthew, it hits us over the head even more that we're invited to be part of the kingdom of God. Jesus is king, and he's come to establish his kingdom. The Beatitudes are the 8 roads to God. They lead us with his gifts of the Holy Spirit to become the new person in Christ who will find happiness and bring that happiness to others. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
What responsibility does social media bear in promoting the truth? The Catholic Catechism notes that in our modern society, the communications media plays a major role in societal information, cultural promotion, and formation. Since society has a right to information that is based on truth, justice, freedom, and solidarity, every segment of the communications culture bears a heavy responsibility for the common good. Media content within the bounds of justice and charity must be true and complete and communicated honestly and properly. The Catechism cautions us to be vigilant rather than passive consumers of information in order to resist unwholesome influences. Journalists are urged to respect the facts while still observing charity by not stooping to defamation of individuals. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Joni and I were saying during the break we need another segment, but we need like another hour. So much news and some very interesting and actually good news coming out of the Vatican this week. All kinds of different developments, and she just covered the audience and checked on what happened there. Hello, my dear. How are you? How's the weather in the Eternal City today?
I'm cool. I haven't actually been outside today. I just wanted to be inside and stay on top of so many news stories. But it was a sun-kissed morning at the The audience was once again, here we are, December, and the general audience was in St. Peter's Square. So, and a little bit of history, you know, we've kind of been talking about this in our emails to each other. Some history was made today at the general audience. I'm sure our listeners are familiar with the fact that the main catechesis is given in 10 or 12 minutes by Pope Francis on a certain topic or focus, and then brief summaries are given in seven other languages, including, they're all generally European languages, but in 2012, Arabic came in to the general audience, and today, December 4, 2024, Chinese has made its debut at the general audience. And having spent time in China and learning a few phrases, I can say xie xie, that's Chinese for thank you, to Pope Francis. And I think that the, you know what I do when I travel, especially in China, I collected, when I was there with the Vatican delegation, on our pillow at night, there were little pieces of paper with phrases in English, the Chinese and then the English. And I kept all those little pieces of paper, and then I went online to learn how to do the phonetic pronunciation of each of those phrases. So anyway, xie xie, thank you to Pope Francis for this. And the young gal who was reading the Chinese edition today of the general audience catechesis, her name is Martha Zhao, and she's actually head of the Chinese edition of the Vatican's FIDES agency, which is a news agency. She's been there since 1998, so we're looking at a lot of years. And it's very interesting. I wanted to correctly pronounce her name. But if you go online for pronunciation, because you have to know this stuff when you're on radio, there's Chinese, there's the Cantonese Chinese, Mandarin Chinese, and then there's the English pronunciation of her last name, of her family name, which is Zhao, and that would be Zhao, J-O-W, should we say, in English. Anyway, Martha was born into a Catholic family in Beijing. They've been Catholics for many generations, and she, as I said, has worked for FIDES since 1998. She edited and launched the first Catholic missionary bulletin in Chinese, and in August of that same year, the editorial staff with her lead delivered the first bulletin printed in Chinese ideograms. So that's what we call what the rest of us might say characters. That's what the Chinese language is. So so it's very exciting to have this today. And I found it so exciting and kind of wanted to highlight it in our radio show simply because, as a lot of our listeners know, either from reading what I've written or from what we've talked about, in 2018 the Vatican signed an accord with the communist government of China, giving them certain permission to name bishops for the Catholic Church. There's been a lot of pushback at this over the years, and that policy was re-signed every 2 years, and just a month or two ago signed again for several more years. So there's been a lot to say, and I think the fact that the Vatican has now decided to include in the weekly audience, not just today, but forever in the weekly audience, the Chinese language summary in Chinese will be offered of the focus. So that's going to allow Chinese all over the world, whether they read it online. And if you go online, by the way, the Vatican does already have what they call simplified. They have two versions of the Chinese language on their news, Vatican News website. So anybody who has ever studied Chinese can go online. But I think this is the day we'll long remember as when Chinese becomes the second non-European language to be included in the audience. So kudos to Martha for her presentation today. Kudos to the Vatican for introducing Chinese now as a weekly feature, you know, of the papal general audience. So good news, a little bit of history made today, December 4th.
That's awesome.
I know, really a wonderful story. But I mean, Teresa, as you and I were saying, there is so much news this week. And as you know, on Saturday, December 7th, the 21 new cardinals, 20 of whom will be eligible to vote in a conclave, they will be created by the Pope in a consistory in the afternoon. After that consistory, there will be courtesy visits by the public to the new cardinals in the Paul VI Hall and other designated areas. And then later that evening, there's going to be I think it's the eighth version of the Concert for the Poor in the Paul VI Hall. Sunday, December 8th, we have Pope Francis celebrating Mass with all the new cardinals and other cardinals who live and work in Rome. And then after, I suppose, a quick lunch, the Pope is going to be at the Spanish Steps at 4 Sunday afternoon, because Sunday is, of course, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. And so he's going to go for the traditional laying down of a wreath of a big bouquet of flowers at the foot of the statue of the Immaculata. And then, of course, he usually recites a prayer that he has written. And at the same time that the Pope will be at the Spanish Steps, we're going to have Archbishop Rino Fisichella, who's in charge of the entire 2025 Jubilee year. He will be at 4 p.m. in the left-hand colonnade of St. Peter's Square at the inauguration of 100 Nativity Scenes. This is an annual event now. All these Nativity Scenes are set up under the left-hand colonnades. Bands will play. The Vatican gendarmes will be there with their band. And so, I mean, it's like, you know, there's just no end to activities.
Right.
And keeping the Pope busy, keeping the media busy, and then some of the media, by the way, both Friday morning and Saturday morning at 10 o'clock for an hour or two, some of the new cardinals will be available to the press for meetings and interviews. So you'll see stories coming up in the coming days of some of the amazing lives of the new cardinals. So, but you know, we need half of our show just to look at the headlines.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a really cool story, and you and I were going back and forth as we always do in prepping for our segment. And the beautiful story about the nativity scene in St. Peter's, which I cannot wait to see, because this, I think, has to be one of a kind in terms of them building some sort of like a mini island oasis to show life in the Venetian island.
Well, there's a town in northern Italy. It's only a town of about 8,000 people, and it's on an island. Mm-hmm. And it's very close to the Adriatic Sea between Venice and Trieste. So what they're doing is creating a nativity scene, the traditional nativity story. They're creating, recreating a nativity scene but with the idea of kind of a lagoon. And any of our listeners who have been to Venice know what we're talking about, you know.
I was just there in October, by the way. I was just in Venice in October.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there will be a large body of water in St. Peter's Square. And what I love about this story...
Will that be the Holy Sea? Just kidding.
This time we spell it S-E-A, the Holy Sea.
This is a side joke. So years ago, one of our... A local reporter was going over to see John Paul II. I forget what was going on. There was a big story. No, I think it was Cardinal Sciacca when he was heading over to Rome to work at the Vatican with John Paul II. And one of the reporters got there and didn't know where the Holy See was because they didn't see any water. I mean, that's a true story. This is how poorly informed some reporters are. I'm just saying that popped in my head. I just had to get that out there. Because you and I as Catholics,
Teresa, you're right.
Yeah.
It's hard today with so much out there on social media, and you're a new journalist. This is your first day writing about the Vatican and the Holy S-E-E, Holy See. And so you're about to misspell, but if you've gone online for even 17 seconds, you're going to find out the correct spelling. But there was a period, you're absolutely right, when journalists were featuring the wrong spelling of C. So, but I think you can't misspell lagoon. So I think that's what we're going to. That's what we're going to see in St. Peter's Square. And what I love is that one of the workers, because the article that you and I both read, the you know, the CNA story by Hannah Brockhaus.
Yeah.
It featured the two men in charge of this, one of whom pointed out that one of their big concerns was coming up with a system to avoid the fact that the seagulls, how to keep the seagulls of Rome from turning it into a giant birdbath. Oh, Teresa, mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Even as we're speaking, if you go over to St. Peter's Square, you're not just going to see pigeons in the square. You will see seagulls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, behind that, this is so strange, but the seagulls were not apparently getting enough food at the sea, on the Mediterranean Sea, and they started moving inland to rivers and so forth. And the biggest nearby river would have been the Tiber.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, there just wasn't that much food available. And they just kept going inland, and I guess they found out in St. Peter's Square there are people who feed anything that flies. And so there's quite a number of seagulls. But what the Vatican has done so that this lagoon doesn't attract seagulls and cause a lot of problems, this is amazing. They came up with a system of ultrasonic machines to keep the seagulls away. So, by the way, this will all be inaugurated, the tree and the nativity scene, on Saturday, again, the 7th, another big day in the Vatican, about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So,
cool.
You know, when the sun goes down, you can inaugurate the nativity scene. There will be lights, and then the tree, of course, will be lit. So, you know. But this is very exciting. And this all goes back to different entities or cities in Rome or regions of Italy or abroad when there were some cost-cutting measures in 2012 in Vatican City State, and it was discovered that huge amounts of money were being spent on the nativity scene. It was decided that the, you know, maybe outside entities, et cetera, could help. And so over the years, different proposals have come into the Vatican. There's probably some arriving today for, you know, the next years or so. And then the Vatican accepts it. They, you know, communicate back and forth, and all of a sudden you've got a place like Agrado in northern Italy coming up with a very ingenious idea and following through on it. And of course, as I said, we will see that on Saturday. So I think I have pictures of the last 15 or 20 nativity scenes. I obviously go every single year, living just blocks away from the square. How could I not take pictures?
Right.
Maybe someday I'll do kind of a little slideshow of all the...
That would be great. I'd love that.
Yeah, all the ones over the years, exactly. So this will be exciting, and I'm glad you kind of pinpointed that today, because I think it is important for, and the only sad part is that this doesn't stay up, as far as I know. It's only going to be up like about a month, and it's too bad it couldn't kind of carry over into the new year, into the holy year. In the past, before Pope Francis, the Vatican Nativity Scene and Tree remained up until the February 2nd Feast of the Presentation.
Right,
so,
right.
And that's exactly how long my tree remains up in my home. Maybe this year they could make an exception, especially, Teresa, gosh, the work that's gone into this.
Oh, I can't even imagine. I was telling our listeners at the top of the hour about the beautiful nativity scenes around Italy and how they incorporate the townspeople and everything from the butcher baker, literally, and the candlestick maker. Can't wait to see it and hear all about it with you, my dear, next week. Joan Lewis, of course, JonesRome at WordPress.com. Always love having her on the program. And again, we could have spoken for the entire hour or longer, but we'll catch up again next week. We'll be right back on a Wednesday. Stay tuned.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
A baby's heart is beating 18 days from conception. Hello, I'm Marian Kowarski, the director of Pro-Life Across America. We're non-political and totally educational. We don't scream or scold. Instead, we help people working through unplanned pregnancies know their options, and we rely on people like you to help with our mission. Check us out on Facebook, YouTube, or at ProLifeAcrossAmerica.org.
Pro-Life Across America, the billboard people.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
This show is underwritten in part by the following nonprofit company.
My dear brothers and sisters, I'm Bishop Gerald Vinke of the Diocese of Salina in Kansas. This year, you can create a Christmas miracle for a child growing up in the extreme poverty of a developing country. By donating to Send a Box of Joy, you will surprise a child with what could be the first Christmas gift of his or her life. You can bless a child today by donating at boxofjoy.org.
Thanks for tuning in to Catholic Connection, a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be joined by Father Mitch Pacha with our cultural connections, and we'll be talking, of course, about the Jubilee year and some other issues in the news. I always enjoy catching up with Father Mitch and picking his very fine and large brain on all the things that matter most, and we'll talk about that with him and you tomorrow. Have a great Wednesday. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.